Tired of settling for less than the best with your team's dry land program? Swim Strong Dry Land is the answer you've been looking for. With world-class dry land programming for every age group, customized to fit your team's needs, nutritional coaching and education centered on the latest evidence-based research, leadership training and character development to promote an athlete-driven culture, sports psychology education and mental skills training, coaches' corners to promote collaboration, data-driven performance analysis, and an unrivaled family of athletes, coaches, and teams, fast swimming starts here.
Hey guys, I've been trialing some revolutionary new swim tech, and now you can get your hands on it too. This is EO Swim Better, a swimming evolution in the palm of your hands. Improve your technique with EO Swim Better.
Analyze your stroke technique with EO's Swim Better handset. Go to eolab.com, use code Brett at checkout and save 10%.
Here we are, mate. Charlie Hawk, how are you doing? Welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thank you for having me. I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Good, good. I'm doing well, mate. Let's clear this up straight away. We're not related, right?
We are not related. I see the swim comments and all that all the time asking if there's a relation, but no relation.
No relation. Where'd you grow up?
Newcastle, actually.
Newcastle. Okay, not too far away, so there might be some relation. I mean, there's got to be some sort of distance. There's not that many Hawks in Australia, right?
There's not, so I'm sure somewhere in the distance there's some kind of relation.
Yeah, awesome, mate. Well, how'd you get into the swimming thing in Newcastle?
Pretty simply, to be honest. Just like growing up, parents thought it was a really good skill to learn how to swim. So yeah. Pretty much did like swimming lessons, learned to swim from when I was a little kid. Just not taking it too seriously at all, and then kind of like actually through like school swimming carnivals just started to realize that I was pretty good at this swimming thing, and just kind of naturally progressed from there, you know, go through the school process, made it through the states and all that, and then turned out I was pretty good and started doing more club and taking it more seriously and just kind of progressed from there.
There's nothing better than a good Aussie school carnival, is there?
No, it's something that a lot of Americans don't really understand over here when I explain to them that, you know, the whole school takes a day off and we go to some random public pool and most people just take it as a day off school, but, you know, some of us got to take it a little more seriously.
Yeah, I remember it vividly. You know, actually someone sent me a record sheet from like 1989 where I still have the 200 freestyle recorder at Botany Bay pool, you know, like when the whole school took off and we went and swam at 200 freestyle for some reason. I don't know what I was doing swimming at 200 free, but were you always a freestyler?
I kind of like bounced around a little bit growing up. Was always kind of trying to swim as many events as possible. Pretty much up until I was like sort of like 16, 17, I never really like specialized. So like at some point, probably when I was like 12, I probably called myself a breaststroker. And then I remember my first like primary school nationals, like the youngest you can go when you're like in like year four or five, I think I swam the 50 backstroke. So it's kind of honestly been something that I've progressed into these past couple of years. I've always enjoyed the 50 and 100 freestyle. Like it's just something that you always do growing up. But in terms of being like a pure freestyle, that's definitely something that's pretty recent.
Now you know, growing up in Australia, you play many different sports. What were the other things that you were involved in around that time when you were young?
Yeah, kind of growing up, did a little bit of everything. A lot of what we call athletics, but I guess for the Americans, track and field. Was considered myself a pretty good little distance runner when I was younger. Obviously, a lot of swimming, played soccer until I was probably like 14. And then did all the different types of sports growing up, did some taekwondo. I think I even did dance for a couple of years. So really didn't kind of hone in on swimming until probably 12 or 13.
Similar. Yeah. Very similar. It's funny you say that, like you're a distance runner, but you're a sprinter in the pool. I was the same. Like I could swim a good 50 in the pool, but I couldn't run a fast 100 on the track. Like I was 800 and 1500. It must be all the aerobic training we do at that young age. I don't know. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, I think I honestly think that the reason I was a good runner was literally I was just fitter than the rest of the kids. Right, I don't think there was any technique in there at all. Yeah. I think I was just swimming a lot probably.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way I feel about it too. That's cool. Rugby, football, or what? You know, what did you grow up with? Rugby league, rugby union? What was it?
Yeah, so I grew up with a lot of rugby league. Originally, I'm actually from a pretty small town, about, I think it's like half an hour inland from Newcastle. And it's just all like rugby league. And Newcastle's more union, I think, now. But yeah, I grew up with rugby league. I almost played it in like when I was like year five or six, but I'm pretty skinny now, but I was even more skinny back then. I think I would have just got like snapped in half and not been able to recover.
Now, mate, the only real famous swimmer I know from Newcastle, I'm talking famous, is my roommate at the Olympics, Justin Norris. Norrie was an Olympic medalist in 200 IM, a world championship medalist, 200 fly. He raced, or 200 fly, 200 IM, the up other way around. He raced Phelps at the Sydney Olympics, and he got third. Phelps got fourth. And that's kind of his claim to fame, that he beat Phelps at the Olympics. And but then he went on to be a famous YouTuber with his kids, you know, got millions of views and stuff. So anyway, that's Justin Norris. Did you know Norrie growing up?
Not personally, but like obviously very famous dude. Yeah, coming from the area. I'm pretty sure he actually swam at my club team back home. I could be wrong about that. But yeah, cool to sort of see, someone like that and have that growing up. And I think, I don't know if it's still going, but at one point he even had a swim school going. So you can sort of see some people coming up through that. And then it's also like, yeah, getting big on YouTube. I think it was great for swimming, like the publicity of swimming, to have like a pretty big like public figure come from the sport of swimming.
Yeah. Now the transition between being a good kid in high school and things like that, and then going on to be one of the best in the country, and then going getting a scholarship in America, there's a big leap. So like for me, there was like this transition period, like I had to figure things out after high school, I had to go get a job, I had to kind of work my way through things. How did you get from high school to Alabama?
Yeah, I think it was pretty seamless, luckily for me. I kind of talk about being pretty lucky to have landed at Alabama. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know where I got the idea of coming to the States from. But growing up, that was just always what I wanted to do. I always wanted to come to college. But honestly knew very little about it. Like even on my recruiting trips, I didn't know much about conferences or like much about rankings. Like I remember us flying like Swim Cloud and thinking this is the coolest thing ever. So kind of always wanted to come to the US. And I remember when it's probably, yeah, that like when you can start being recruited, I remember the first couple of coaches reaching out and thinking it was like so awesome to be able to like talk to these coaches and just kind of slowly learnt from there what like the process of college recruiting and like conferences and all that was. But so came over in January of 2020 and did some recruiting trips. Still like I don't think I was that fast at that point, and I swam like 2 fly 4 a.m. so very far from what I swim now. But was lucky enough that the coaches at Alabama at the time sort of pushed pretty heavy to get me on a recruiting trip, and came down as soon as I saw like campus and the athletics here. I'm sure you were aware of the extent of Alabama athletics. I just knew that it was kind of the place for me and decided to commit from there.
Yeah. That's super cool, man. And there's usually a little bit of pushback in Australia, you know, like there's this negative vibe about going, you know, leaving Australia and going to America, and kind of, you know, there's this, it's almost like this, they cut the cord, you know, once you leave, you're done, you're not invited back in a way, like you're kind of pushed out of the fold. So I guess there was definitely a period where you had to decide, like, is this really going to be the best interest in my career, or should I stay here and try and take that national route, you know, go through the state titles and try and get on the national team that way and stay within the Australian fold, or do I cut the cord, go to America or take a chance? I guess there was kind of that leap of faith, right?
For sure. There was definitely, definitely something I didn't think about probably enough when I was kind of making that first decision. But the main thought process for me was obviously swimming's not something that a lot of people can make the best living off of. It's just unfortunately the reality of our sport that there's not the money of like the football, like soccer, like even like the rugby. Like you really have to be like at the very top breaking multiple world records a year to be kind of like any kind of lucrative success in the sport. Right. So for me, like the reason behind kind of chasing the US was, well, if I'm going to get anything out of swimming, I'd love to get a free education out of swimming, which I think is something that's pretty unique to the US experience. So, a huge draw for me was being able to make the most of my swimming ability. And for me, I saw that as getting a degree. Growing up, like, education and university was always like so important in my family. So that was kind of the number one priority. Coming out of university debt free is a pretty cool thought. And as like I said, something pretty unique to this US system. And I know that there are pathways in Australia, but just not as like, almost like not as simple, like you got to go through some different ways. But seeing that how well the US integrates their sport with their schooling was a huge appeal for me. So definitely, a big decision from that career standpoint. But the huge draw was the school perspective for me.
Yeah, for sure. And you picked a good spot, mate. There has been some transition, I'd imagine, from the time that you picked to where you are now in terms of the head coaches, maybe even the assistant coaches, and maybe the whole structure has kind of has gone through a whole, you know, new process from 2020 to now, correct?
Yeah. There's been quite a bit of change, as is the culture in college sports a lot of the time, especially now. You see a lot of coaches kind of moving around, not just in the sport of swimming, but in a lot of sports. Like, I think it's a pretty fluid sort of coaching environment. Definitely some change, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I've loved every year that I've been out here. I've made some great connections with every coach that I've had the opportunity to talk to, even at the schools that I didn't commit to. I still remember, I still took a lot out of those chats and those relationships. I still follow even where some of those guys are now. Like, I still look at some of the coaches that recruited me back then and where they might have ended up now, and I still think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome, mate. You committed, I'd imagine, to a male head coach, and now you swim for a female head coach. And the only reason why I bring this up is it's fairly uncommon. You know, there's not a lot of head coaches at Division One colleges who are female who are running men's teams. So just in terms of curiosity, I'm just wondering, like, how is that for you? How is that for the men's team to have a female head coach?
Yeah. So I initially committed when we were under Coley's head coaching. Okay. So that was the stuff that I committed to. And then that changed before I got here. So Mario Gear took over the head coaching role before I got here. And she did such a great job through that transition period. As soon as it was announced that she was going to be taking over the head coaching role, we were on phone calls, with me, with my parents. It was actually pretty funny when she got announced that it was going to announce that she was going to be taking over the head coaching role. I was away on like a 3-day camping trip in the middle of nowhere, no reception. So I came back to all these messages on my phone and I was like, I don't know what's happening. So, but she hopped on a call with my parents, and was so fantastic through the whole thing. Was very transparent, was great with that communication, even though, you know, we're on the other side of the world to whatever was happening over here. And then once we got here, I think it's like you said, it's a lot of change. And I think Mario's done a lot of learning, which has been great to be able to see. But I think from the men's team perspective, honestly, it's really no different to, I think, how a male head coach would be. She does a great job at like communicating with us, from like every perspective, whether it be from like a coaching swimming perspective to like a logistics perspective. I don't see there had better be too much difference from like having a male head coach to Mario, who I think is a great head coach. I think it's very cool that I get to sort of see this and be a part of, like you said, like, it's really, there's not many head coaches that are females in Division One swimming. So I think it's pretty cool to be part of that.
That's awesome. Yeah. And just Margo's experience as a, you know, college swimmer, professional swimmer, elite athlete, that type of thing. The to be able to relate to you and what you're doing and how you're doing. And it's so relatable when you've got someone who's been through it, especially as close as what Margot had been through it herself, you know?
Yeah, it's really nice to have that connection and be able to draw on that experience. I mean, Margot was an incredible college swimmer. I think multiple national championships. I don't even know the number. And then obviously multiple US teams that she was selected on. So for her to have that experience and to be able to access that kind of experience on deck, I think is really cool. You know, going into those bigger competitions this year, preparing for trials, and previous years preparing for, you know, trials to try and make world championship teams, Commonwealth Games teams, I think has been really, really good to have that experience on deck. And if I'm ever unsure, you know, going into this double taper from SECs to NCAAs is definitely an adjustment. It's a quick turnaround. So to be able to talk to someone who was able to very successfully make that turnaround multiple times throughout her career. And like you said, mentioned pretty recently. So she's very familiar with, you know, some of the things that we're going through is really, really good to have.
I remember recruiting Margot. This is so weird too, because you recruit hundreds of people over the years. I was the head coach at Auburn for 10 years and recruited many, many people, men and women, right? And so you don't remember all of the encounters, but for some reason, the one that with Margot sticks out, where I was recruiting her at the Indianapolis pool, and, you know, the rules of college say that you're not allowed to talk to the kids on the deck, so you have to take them off the deck. So I remember having to pull Margot off into this underground room, you know, at the Indianapolis natatorium, and just her and I in this little bunker kind of chatting with each other, and I'm like, this is so awkward, you know. It's like, but that was the rules of the NCAA, and so for whatever reason recruiting Margot just sticks in my head. But man, she had a phenomenal career and she's doing so well at Alabama. That's cool to see her leading a massive team like that and doing awesome. I'm very curious, how did you go from a 400 IM, a 200 flyer to a sprint freestyler, let's say, you know, and having, you know, incredible success there? Were you put in the wrong spot early on, or do you feel like the training that you did early on has helped you where you are now?
I definitely think it's helped. I think everything that you do well helps set you up for the next step. I definitely think it was a matter of my situation. I mean, I'm sure you know something about the culture of Hunter Swim Club, which is where I come from. It's just a lot of yards and just a lot of swimming. I remember doing lots and lots of butterfly growing up, which was great for me at the time. I mean, I was able to almost even split a long course two fly, which is crazy to think about now. So I think it was just, swimming to where I was at the time, was pretty good at the 4 AM. I was pretty lucky to be able to make finals at trials for Tokyo 2021. In the 4 AM. I missed the final in the two fly. I was pretty gutted about that. The two fly was kind of the one we were pushing for to try and make the final. But
how old were you then? 18 or something?
21, yeah, maybe 17 at the time. Yeah, 17.
18. So what were your times in the 4 AM two fly at that time?
At that time I was 159 low in the two fly and 425 I think in the 4 AM. Fortunate enough to have that experience, which I remember just thinking was the coolest thing ever, walking out to Olympic trials final and having my name come up on the big board behind me. And I think I added time in the final, but I was like,
this. And we're talking about Olympic Trials Australia, by the way, everyone.
Yes.
Get confused. Yeah.
Yes. Australian trials. And kind of came into college under that sort of plan. At mid-season, my first year, I raced my three events were the 5-3, the 4 AM, and the 2 fly. So that was pretty interesting to do that. And then just I think adapting to different kind of training, putting on a little bit more weight. I was very, very skinny at the time, which probably helped in a two fly and 4 AM, very little lactate buildup. and then just adapting to the new training just slowly progressed in the sprint freestyles. I think it's each year it's been more of a progression. Like my freshman year, I swam the 2-3 at SECs. I didn't do particularly great for my standards now. I think I was third in the B final, which at the time I was over the moon about.
Yeah.
And I was on no relays except for the 8-3. And then just slowly kept dropping from there. My sophomore year, we started to try out the 100 free, which worked out really well to be able to put myself on some relays, help the team in that situation. And then this year, I think it's been even more of a progression, being able to help those relays, improving my 50 freestyle and 100 freestyle times, while also still, you know, getting those incremental improvements in the 2-3 and the 5-3, which has been really good.
Oh, so you're still swimming the 5-3?
Yeah, I dropped a lot of time at SECs in the 5-3. I was pretty happy about that. Managed to get on the podium with the two Jakes. So, that 5-3, I think, is something that we've figured out really well this year. I think that was probably the race that I had the hardest time adapting to yards in. Even though a lot of people might argue that's pretty close to a 400, I think strategically and how you approach the race, it's very different, especially to a long course 400 free. So I think I took a lot of time to figure that one out, which I think I've been able to this year. And I think that's helped with dropping a lot of time in that event.
So give us the update on where you're at with your best times from 50 to 500 free.
So 50 and 100, I think I like to consider myself a relay specialist in those because my relay swims a lot faster, which is kind of annoying. But best times in those, I think the 50 is like 19.6, but I've been like 18.7, I think, on a relay before.
Okay.
100, like 42.2, but I've been 41.2 on a relay. 200s at 130.7, I was at SCs. Wow. And then the 500 was 411.6 at SCCs.
Wow. Damn, 130 in the 200. That's smoking, man. So with those times and those swims that you're talking about there, flat start even, you know, you've still got that middle distance kind of feel for your event style, right? Like that, it doesn't seem like you're still fully adapted to sprint yet. Like the middle distance is clicking right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's especially that 200, I think, is a really happy medium for me right now. I think being able to do both events either side of that, being able to do the 100, being able to do the 500, sort of help in that perfect combination for the 200. I'm able to have some good opening speed, but also able to hold it on pretty well. Despite being chased down at SECs this year, that was a pretty tough one to swallow. But I think it definitely helps being able to access that, like, upper end of mid distance to that 500 level. I even raced 1,000 in dual meets twice this year, which was not fun, but it was a good experience. So being able to race those longer events, I think, helps coming down. But like we talked about with that progression into now a sprint freestyle, so I think progressing that speed has been a huge factor in allowing my middle distance events also to come down. I like to think of it as like the faster I can go, the easier I can sit at like that middle distance speed. So I think it's like a proportionality thing. So it's, good, happy medium.
Right. A lot of people don't understand that top end speed affects all your different speeds, right? So if you can swim faster, you can hold pace better as well, you know, like faster pace for sure.
Absolutely. It's the distance group. It's a pretty different structure this year. So we've got a lot of like lower mid distance swimmers as well. So like myself and Kaiki, the 200 freestyle, we have a lot of good training together, but we swim in the distance group. And I make a joke that like all the true distance swimmers like hate me because of how easily I can hit pace and speed. Whereas they like really have to push it to try and hit their paces. Whereas like if it's like a 50 at like 200 pace, I can like hit it pretty easily because I'm pretty lucky to have that speed.
So when are you working on your top end speed then? If you're in the distance group primarily, are you moving over to sprint to work on top end?
Not necessarily like shifting over groups, but having that diverse range in the distance group allows us a pretty cool experience where like on like Monday afternoons, I'll do my 500 pace with like the 500 of the mile guys.
Okay.
But then like Tuesday and Thursday, when they might be doing more just like, you know, grinding out like 7K mile sets, myself and a lot of the sort of that lower middle distance guys, we can do a lot of top end and overspeed work. So like Tuesday, we'll usually work some like contrast from like power, so resistance, into overspeed fast work. And then that Thursday, a lot of time we're going off the blocks for 175s all out fast, really working that front end, like that overspeed work.
It makes sense, right? So like, yeah, you're getting your distance work in, you're getting your pace work in, but and your endurance and your volume, let's say, but you've got to get that speed work in, you got to get that power work in. You're not going to get faster by not swimming fast. And it sounds like you guys have figured that balance out pretty good there.
Yeah, it's a pretty fun little flow to the week. I get to work on, yeah, that more like distance, like sort of sitting at a certain pace. But also like, you know, we still hit some like good aerobic, just like swimming it out, which I think is still important. But we're also able to get up, go fast, race, which is really, really fun. I remember like the start of the year, it's pretty frustrating because you're not as fast as you want to be. And, you know, you're going fast and it's hurting, but you're not quite at that level. But I think it's really fun to be able to race fast guys all year, which is a pretty, pretty cool part of being part of like such a good program like Alabama. But yeah, I think developing that speed, especially for that like 200, we talk about like, you look at the guys that are going 129 and what they have to split out in. I mean, you got to be out 43 low, if not 42 high to the feet, and then be able to finish to go 129. So you definitely need speed.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's exactly what you're talking about there. It's like you train for the specific demands of the race. And if the race demands that you go out in under 43, then you better be training at that speed in practice, right? Like you can't be swimming just distance sets and holding 47s in practice and then expect to get up on the block one day and say, okay, now I'm going to go out in 42 and it's going to feel comfortable. Like it doesn't make any sense. So a lot of people think that this sprint revolution thing that I'm talking about is just about swimming fast, short distances for no yardage, right? Like it doesn't make sense to me. What I'm saying is train for the specific demands of the race. If the demand of the race is to have easy speed and go out at under 43 seconds and be able to come home and close, then you better have a mixture of speed and endurance and you better train those. And it sounds like you've got the perfect mix at Alabama going right now.
Yeah, it's definitely helping. I mean, dropping times is always a good indicator that you're doing something right. But yeah, definitely a good mix. Like you said, like, you know, it's great to do pace like all day and I can hit 200 pace, 500 pace, but like realistically, yeah, you gotta be out quick. And so like, I think that working that has been a big part of being able to get my time drops down.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, getting that balance is really important. I mean, even like the 500 is still a race that requires some speed. I mean, sure. At SECs, I think, I don't know the splits off the top of my head, but Jake McGahey, who won, who was out in like 137 at the 200, which for a lot of people is a good 200 free. And then he had 300 left after that. Yeah, definitely a unique like balance.
Yeah, train for the specific demands of the race. And that to me is what I've been harping on. If your specific demands of a 50 freestyle are to hold top end speed for as long as you can, generally we fall off top end speed after about, you know, 7 or 8 seconds, but you know, holding on to that speed as long as you can. If that's the demand of the race, then train for that demand. But if the demand is to go out in 137 and you got 300, you know, yards left to swim, you better have some endurance background behind you, you know? So that's the case. Yeah, that's good that you figured it out. Now, how much rest did you particularly get for like SECs this year?
Yeah, so SECs was a pretty good amount of rest. Obviously, for like myself and a couple, quite a few of the other guys on the team, we have to look past SECs.
Right.
We have to look at NCAAs. I mean, you can't just sort of dump everything into SECs, which I think is a pretty unique balance, which thankfully I don't have to come up with the plan for that. Obviously, I have a hand in the plan for that, but I trust my coaches a lot. And so obviously they sort of do the heavy lifting on making that plan. Yeah, obviously I have some contribution and obviously it matters like how I'm feeling, but yeah, so we definitely gave SECs a good push, which I think was good because I was able to get on the podium a couple times, hit a few best times, which is always just like a good confidence boost. But you know, we definitely have, hopefully have more in the tank. Obviously there's no definites in the sport, but yeah, hopefully have more in the tank to push at NCAAs. And yeah, just looking forward to getting that opportunity to get up and race again. We haven't quite started to come down yet. We still got about 2 weeks today till NCAA starts. We're still a pretty good block of work. The good thing about SECs is it is pretty early compared to a lot of other conferences. Yeah. So we're able to kind of hit another couple weeks of work in between the two, which is pretty, I think is pretty fortunate.
I was going to say that you kind of come down for SECs, you rest, you shave, you have a good hit out. You obviously race all week, so it's hammering your body, probably somewhere in the vicinity of maybe 10 to 15 races over the course of the five days that you swam. So tons of racing, and then maybe a couple of days to recover, and then you come up again, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what we've done. I think last year I had a pretty rough NCAAs, and I think that was a lot due to that time in between the two SECs and NCAAs. I think I haven't done a turnaround like that before. My freshman year, I had to go to Last Chance to make. I didn't even qualify individually to NCAAs. I went as a relay swimmer, so I didn't really get a taste of that sort of double rest. So last year, I think the body just took a bit of a hit. Came into NCAAs planning to be fresh, but just wasn't quite there. So hoping this year to be able to continue that a little better. Definitely took a couple of days reset. Still in the water, but not sort of pushing the body as hard because, like you said, it's SECs is such a long week. I mean, all conferences are, but SECs follows that 5-day meet schedule. So lots of individual races, lots of relays. It is a long week, so a couple days reset, and then we've sort of had about 2 weeks of good work, which is good to see, like, check back in that we're still at that level in terms of the work, you know, being able to hit those big sets, and then looking forward to getting some rest pretty soon.
Yeah, a lot of people think the little bit of resting and racing can lose a lot, but I don't think you lose much at all in that time. I'm sure after coming down off SECs, having a few days rest, and then getting back into training, you probably got back into it like real quick in terms of where you're at previously, right?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to get back into it. I mean, when you rest and race, I mean, you're still swimming, you're still working out. The point of resting isn't to lose fitness. I think, again, luckily that's the coach's job to sort of kind of navigate that. Again, I have a lot of input with that. But was able to feel pretty fit through SECs. And then, yeah, a couple of days reset. And the first couple of days after a competition are always rough. It's always like, you feel pretty beat down and, you know, you've been swimming for a week, but you just don't feel like you're moving through the water properly. So having those couple of days to kind of reset is always nice. And then hit back into it with a pretty good group we've got training here. So kind of being able to feed off of each other is really nice. And then, yeah, kind of get back into it, check that we're sort of still at that level, which I think we are, and get some more work. And then, yeah, rest for NCAAs.
This doesn't seem like an important conversation maybe to you, but this is a very, very important part of this conversation that we're having right now, because every national team around the world that is doing this double peaking periodization where you go from Olympic trials to the Olympics, you know, in a short period of time, they're listening, they're studying, they're trying to figure this. Everybody's trying to figure this out right now in terms of perfecting it for everybody, right? Like, they may understand it for a certain individual, but how do you get an endurance swimmer to peak? How do you get a sprinter to peak again? So going to the Olympic trials and then 4 to 5 weeks later coming out and swimming Olympics is a huge piece of the puzzle right now for so many people. So people are listening to this. Trust me, it's really important to try and understand this. In fact, one of the top coaches in Australia, I was just talking to him about this privately a couple of days ago. He's trying to figure it out for his swimmers. So it's a very interesting topic. And I'm thankful that you're opening up to us and sharing it, because look, you don't always get it right. And I think you got to make some tweaks. And it is one thing to say, I'm going to put it in the coach's hands. But, you know, I think the more professional you become and the more you start to understand yourself as well is where you start to at least have some ownership, if not input. You know, the ownership is, I know what I need to do to get right here. And I think sometimes, you know, I've made the mistake myself of maybe just laying around and doing nothing, thinking that's the answer, right? Just and then you're very lethargic. That's the second time you come around, you've got no power, you got no pop. And then kind of figuring out, okay, I need to stay active. I need to keep moving, even in this period of time. It's okay to go back and do some work and hit myself for a couple of weeks and then get some more rest. So I think, you know, the ownership is you're figuring it out as you go along too, right?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, definitely have a very open line of communication with the coaches. Kind of like what I talked about earlier, being able to talk to Margot about how she was able to manage this like double rest, and my coach Andy, who I work with most of the time, has been great this year, coming in and just being like very open and understanding. It's his first year here with us at the team. So I think we've done a great job at that open line of communication, seeing how I feel, seeing what I've done in the past that's worked versus what I've done in the past that might not have worked as well. And like you said, like talking about like national teams, trying to figure out that double taper, I think that's something that's pretty special about being here in the US, is we race so often and have so many chances to race, not only good competition, but push ourselves to that level. I think it's really, really awesome to be able to understand, get more chances to understand ourselves better. I'm not going into this Olympic cycle this year, you know, not having done something like this in even 12 months, if not 24 months. You know, it's not saying that really comes, like this kind of cycle that we're going to isn't something that comes around every 4 years for us. It's really realistically every single year.
Yeah. Former swimmers looking for a way to give back to the sport in New York City? Reach out to Imagine Swimming. Since 2002, they've been the premier learn to swim school with international and American staff, including Olympic champions Anthony Irvin and Eric Vent. Imagine Swimming offers infant to adult classes, plus competitive team options, water polo, and an artistic swimming club coached by an Olympic silver medalist. With flagship locations across Manhattan and Brooklyn, Imagine is always looking for the next generation of swimmers to pass on their knowledge and passion for swimming. We individualize training in the pool, so why not individualize your nutrition? Erica Biney of Biney Wellness Building will help you and your swimmers get exactly what each athlete needs through genetic testing and personalized nutrition plans. So stop guessing what you should and shouldn't be putting into your body. Athletes within a few weeks have noticed they're recovering faster because they're fueling their body with what they need and staying away from what their body hates. Erica understands swimming. She gets it. She's worked with over 20 Olympians, including the fastest man in the world, Caleb Dressel. Group discounts are available, so go to Biney Wellness Building and get in touch with Erica today. That's Biney, B-E-I-N-E, wellnessbuilding.net. Now, you've also got another consideration here. It's the Olympic year, and you've got to go back for trials. Has there been any team-wide kind of, you know, acceptance that this is an Olympic year and that there may be a different focus? Like, have you been doing any long course work at all? Has there been talk about the preparation between NCAAs and trials yet? Have you figured that out?
Yeah, there definitely has. We've been hitting some long course kind of all year. Obviously, our main focus throughout the college season is short course yards. You know, the fact of the matter is, like, that's what we're here to do. It's what we're here to race. But definitely been swimming some long course, usually about three times a week. which is pretty good to be able to hit, like, touch on that and keep a feel for long course going. And then as for, like, the preparation for trials, where it's, I think it's pretty cool. We have quite a lot of different nationalities on the team. Myself in the distance group, I train with three Brazilians, which I'm very close with. And so obviously they have a little bit of a different prep to me. Like, our trials are a bit at a different time, but from a focus perspective, those guys, even like a lot of the US guys that are planning on going to trials, and then some of the girls and other guys that are from different countries, our focus this year past NCAAs is Olympic trials, is making our respective national teams, which I think is a really cool culture to be a part of, first of all. To have that focus is pretty cool, pretty fun to be able to say that, you know, there's a good group of us this year that are pushing to try and make the Olympics. But yeah, I think throughout the year, it's definitely been all like in the back of our heads. But ultimately, I think swimming is swimming. If you're fit, you're fit. Like, obviously there's an adjustment period going from short course to long course, but being able to touch on it multiple times a week throughout the year, I think has really helped.
Yeah, now, mate, the improvements that you've made and the impact you're having, I'm imagine there's people from Australia not only taking notice, but wanting you to be on that team. You know, they need people like you to be on that Olympic team, especially with the type of experience that you're gaining over here. So what type of communication has there been back home with Australia in getting you back there to be the best you can be at the trials, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I hope some people are sort of in my corner rooting for me back home.
I hope so too, mate.
I know there are, but yeah, definitely, yeah, hoping to be able to go back and not just swim fast at trials, but hopefully make that team and swim as fast as possible at Olympics and do the country proud. I know there's been a little bit of communication every year I go back. Not being like from one of those like big teams back in Australia.
It's
a little different, like coming from a very small, very like age group based club, makes it a little different. I don't really have much direct contact with like Australian head coaches or anything like that, but I definitely feel support, especially every year when I go back. I definitely don't feel any like animosity towards me. Like there's no like, oh, like he swims in the US, like we don't want him. I don't think there's any of that. So I think it's just, I mean, the culture of Australia is we want the best swimmers representing us and swimming as fast as possible. Hopefully I'm the one to do that this year, but yeah.
What's your best time long course 200 free right now?
So long course 200 free last year, I was able to go 47.2. Missed the relay by one spot. I understand that we're going to need quicker than that this year.
What do you think? What's your prediction on top six, let's say, for Olympic trials in Australia?
For the country, for Australia's sake, I'm hoping it's like 46 low. I think it can be. I think we have quite a few guys that are hitting that 46 low, hopefully pushing to go 45. I know Max went, I think he went like 44, within this year. So, we got a lot of fast guys in that 200. Makes it a little harder for me. But, you know, the plan is to be up there competing not just for top six, but hopefully for top two. I think last year at trials, I didn't quite have the best meet. Like I was 47.2 in the morning, feeling pretty comfortable. Like obviously went fast, but I think I had a little more to give and then was only able to incrementally drop at night. So hoping to sort of improve on that this year and like I like hoping to hit that 46, but I mean it's all kind of talk until I'm able to do it. So just gotta put my head down, train, and kind of get there and do the business.
Well, I like the attitude of wanting to get it done. I don't like the language. I don't like hope, man. I don't like hope. For some reason I don't like hope. Eliminate hope. Hope to me is when you go to Vegas and you're playing craps and you hope to, you know, roll the dice and get a certain number like that. That to me is hope, when it's just chance. What I would recommend is you take chance out of the equation. And look, from my personal experience being in America and going back and trying to swim for Australia, I failed for 3 years because I just left it too late. Like I would always say, all right, what's the latest date I can get back there and then swim? And then I hope to make the team, right? And I would swim miserably and terrible and wouldn't do it. And I'd have incredible results in America and miserable results in Australia. And everyone was like, "What? Who is this guy? What's wrong with him?" And so what I've discovered and figured is I needed to allow myself more time to adjust to the time zone and get myself, you know, physically, mentally prepared to make that team. And so I had to allow more time to get back there and do that. So that would be my recommendation in terms of just having a plan set. So in your eyes, where is the perfect balance for you? How long before the trials start would you think you'd want to get back there and be in Australia?
Yeah, so we definitely do have a plan in place for that. Yeah. Right now we're looking at, I think it's around 15, 16 days
right.
heading out before, yeah. because obviously there is a huge time difference. Massive, and
yeah.
even just not taking time difference into account, I mean, you're sitting on a plane for 16 yeah. hours is the long haul flight, right. and then you got to do connections here and there. So yeah. We definitely have that plan in place. We're looking at around 16 days right now heading out, which I think, yeah, it sort of like threads that good line of spending good time here, like, you know, where I have great support from the extensive staff and facilities that we have available to us here at Alabama. And then, but also, yeah, getting out there, getting acclimatized, getting used to the environment. I will be spending, I think it's 12 days before actually in Brisbane, which will be a really good kind of training block, but like not even necessarily training block, taper block pretty much at that point, which I'm looking forward to. And I think it'll be a good like a mental shift, like almost go like spend all my time here training and taking hope out of the equation, you know, putting the work in to get me on that plane to Paris. And then, well, you know, when I'm able to go to Australia, shifting that mindset into, all right, now it's time to race. Now it's time to tune up and go fast.
I love it, man. I love that. It's so good to hear that. That eliminates the hope. I hate the hope, you know, like the fact that you have a plan already set and you're going to be in Brisbane that long and 16 days to me is perfect. I would always leave it 7 days and be like, oh, I hope I can get over the jet lag. And I was a mess, you know, so that 2 week mark is vital, I think. So that's cool that you're doing that. When does school end? Because I know that the trials are kind of like start of June for Australia. And then when does school actually end?
Yeah, so trials, I believe, are June 10th, I think is the date. So school ends like start of May. I think the last last week of exams will be around that May 7th.
Okay.
Because school was kind of shifted up a week for us this year. I believe like we went back to school kind of that January 10th this year, which I think is a little earlier than usual. So there'll be no concern with missing school, which is always a really nice thing. You know, you're already taking 2 weeks out of the year, out of the semester for SECs and NCAAs. And obviously school's a big thing for me. So, not having to worry about missing any school, is nice. And then there'll be that sort of couple of weeks after school finishes before I head out. So that'll be good.
That's awesome, mate. Sounds really, really good. And I'm excited for you. Great. There's some great meets coming up in your future, you know, NCAAs, what a meet. And how fast has that got? Like, it's just, you got to be on in the morning at NCAAs now, and you got to be electric. Like there's no chance at that meet either. It's like, you got to be on or you're out in it.
Yeah. It's going to be quick. There's no way around it. It's going to be quick, you know.
Yeah.
I think that nature, SECs is the same nature. You look at the depth of SECs.
Mm-hmm.
The 2-3 final was, I don't know the exact, it was 32 high or something like that, which is an NCAA qualifying time. You got to go that in the morning to make it back, which is just like crazy. But I think that's a great skill that I've learned. I remember swimming like New South Wales States all growing up, especially as like an age grouper, you can just bluff the morning, like to whatever, you'll end up in lane 5 or 6. Like it is what it is, you know. I think there's a particular culture in Australia of dropping in finals. which is something you had to kind of unlearn when you come to the States, because you have to go so quick in the morning just to make it back, which is huge individually, but also huge for teams. You know, when you're looking at competing from a team perspective, you want to be in that A final. Even if you add time at night, it's not ideal. You obviously want to move up spots, but you got to be in that final to give yourself, to, you know, put yourself in that position to move up. So I think that's been a huge skill that I've learnt, and being able to translate coming back, always able to go pretty quick in the morning, which is also a huge thing on those international level meets. I mean, you can't win the Olympics if you come ninth in the morning.
No.
You can't medal at Olympics if you come ninth in the morning or 10th in the morning. Yeah. And you can say my best time would have done this, or you can, but you know, you gotta be there to be able to do it. So I think it's a great skill to learn.
Yeah, man, you're picking up so many awesome skills, physical and mental skills, that are going to set you up for your future once you get back home. What are you studying, actually?
I'm studying electrical engineering. So it keeps me busy for sure. Again, that sort of what I was talking about earlier, like education's so important to me. Yeah. And that was kind of the main focus, when obviously like the swimming is fantastic, but being able to use that swimming to get a good degree, which will take me past my swimming career, was a huge importance to me.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Listen, haven't always been the biggest fan of Alabama, but I'm over that now. But I will say this: one of the greatest coaches of any generation, of any sport, of any team, you know, just retired at Alabama. Nick Saban, to me, is one of the greatest of all time. I love listening to him. I would love to be coached by him in something, anything, you know. Like, he talks about when he grew up, his dad made him wash cars, and you know, if there was a spot, he'd have to do it again. I'd love Nick to do that to me, you know, just like, all right, Brett, start again, you know. What was the impact like when he decided to step back at Alabama?
Yeah, that was a crazy moment. That's kind of one of those, like, you'll always remember where you are when you heard, like,
yeah.
I remember we were in the training room, and I was like chilling in the hot tub, and one of our trainers just go, Nick Saban is retired. I was like, no, you're having a joke. Like, yeah. Nick Saban's never going to retire.
Yeah.
And then it was true. And what a crazy couple of days for Alabama fans, Alabama football fans, like trying to figure out the new coach. And I think, it was really cool to be able to have that spotlight on Alabama athletics, not just when he retired, but just all the time. Whenever Alabama football is doing something, there's a spotlight on us. It was definitely sad, but looking forward to next season to see what the new coach can do.
Give the Aussies some perspective of what it's like to be at an Alabama football game in that stadium.
It's hard to honestly give perspective. I mean, the stadium's like 105,000 capacity, and for most of the games you go to, at least the SEC games, it's full.
And yeah, there's probably like 30,000 people outside the stadium once you've got the 105 inside.
That's exactly what I was about to say. It's not even just the people in the stadium, but like tailgating, which I don't think is an Australian, definitely isn't an Australian thing. It's uniquely American. Like, I'll come out of Saturday morning practice at whenever we finish 9:30, and say the game is until 6 p.m. So you've got like so much time in between, and there'll be people set up with their tents, with a TV ready to watch, like outside the stadium. They're not going to the game. They've got their Alabama stuff on, and they're watching the game, and they've got like their barbecue out, they're grilling up. Like, it is, Saturdays in Tuscaloosa when it's a game day are a whole experience. It's not just you, like, even talking to other people at different colleges, they go to the game half an hour before the game starts, you know, in a t-shirt and shorts. Alabama, you go to the quad and tailgate for 2 hours before, and then you're at the stadium an hour, like hour and a half before, and you're dressed up in your nice polo shirt, and you got your boots on, and it's an experience.
Yeah, I bet. And look, if the people that don't know Nick Saban, look him up and just listen to some of his quotes, or just the way he influences people and the things he says. I mean, brilliant man. I think we're going to be listening to him for many, many years in terms of his influence. Cool, man. Well, listen, good luck. Now, if you make the Olympic team, just letting you know this, I'm telling everyone we're related. I don't care what you say, right? Like, we're related if you make the Olympic team. But
I like that plan.
But good luck, mate. Sounds like there's a couple of months ahead is going to be awesome, exciting. This is what we live for in swimming, right? As swimmers, as athletes, we want this. We want to go to NCAAs. We want to try and get in those finals and contend with a team. Fire our team, and then we want to come out a few months later and try and make an Olympic team and then go and fight for our country, you know, in the pool. So that's, man, what an exciting time for you, man. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, very excited, not just to race but to train. I mean, yeah, it's going to be such an exciting few months, racing, training, like learning, and then just getting in the pool and swimming fast.
Well, listen, my last piece of advice would be this, is do everything you can on every single day to be the best you can. And at the end of the day, I want you to look back and reflect on the day itself and say, I did everything I could today. And then you wake up the next day and you go through that same process again. You go through and you do everything you can. Now, that everything you can includes recovery. It doesn't mean just working hard. It means taking care of your body, taking care of your mind, getting the rest you need, turning off when you need to turn off, and then being as good as you can be when you need to be on, right? Like, leave it all in the pool and then get that recovery. Now, if you do that over the next few months, there's nothing that will say, when you stand behind that block, you'll have so much confidence. You'll say, I did everything I could on every single day to get to this point and I'm ready. And that's the confidence you want behind the block. So, and if you do that, good luck, and I'll be cheering for you, okay?
Thank you so much, Brett. That means a lot.
Cheers, mate. Good to meet you.
You as well.
Take care, buddy.